Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm your co-host, Colin Stewart. I'm joined by my co-host, Aaron Ross, and a guest today.
Hello.
So our guest is actually one of Aaron's first case studies. I've been looking forward to this episode for a while because I'm partway through one of Mike's online courses. But we'll go a little bit deeper into that near the end of the episode. We're joined today by Mike Stankus. He's the SVP of Special Projects at Acquia. Say hello, Mike.
Hey, everybody.
Thanks for joining us. I'd love to get started because when we first met, you sort of shared the story of how you and Aaron first met or almost didn't meet. Do you mind elaborating there?
Sure. I think it was back probably 2012. And I think it was in the early stages of predictable revenue. And I think Aaron had published, you know, the ebook, and one of our guys read it and approached me about this whole concept. And at the time, we had 99% of our business was inbound. We had so many leads coming in that our team didn't even have the bandwidth to call all the inbound leads. And I was like, yeah, this sounds great, but you know, I don't think we need anything like this. They kept on being persistent. And then we met Aaron and these guys convinced me to give it a shot. So we went out and we hired our first couple BDRs. And, you know, at that time, because we were doing so much inbound, we had like literally zero outbound capability in the company. And I'm not talking just from, you know, an inside perspective, but also the field reps that we hired, you know, we're not comfortable actually making outbound calls. So, you know, we hired a couple of kids right out of school. We implemented the playbook that we got from Aaron, and that started us on the journey of outbound.
Cool. And fast forward.
First, I think we should say this might shed a tear because you're saying you were struggling so much with all the leads. You know, it was so hard. So many leads. We were so busy. I know. We're all going to cry for you right now, Mike.
Yeah.
Well, that was then. It's a different story now.
Yeah.
Which we can talk about later.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't always last.
No.
And so you actually started with you had the BDR program or the outbound program or the inside sales team. Was it before Predictable Revenue came in?
Yeah. So, you know, I've done a lot of things at Acquia. When I first got there, I ran the inside sales team and then also built our BDR program. Also started our account management and ran that worldwide and also built out our sales operations group. And so I had a lot on my plate. And so after about a year or so, I handed off the BDR program to another executive at Acquia to focus mostly on the account management side because, you know, at that point we started to acquire a lot of customers and we're a subscription-based business and renewals and, you know, upsell, cross-sell is extremely important to us. And so I, you know, handed that off and completely focused my time on building out, you know, that organization worldwide.
Gotcha. And what happened with the program after you handed it off?
Well, a couple of things were going on. One, we, you know, our inbound lead, you know, flow started to plateau and then actually drop a little bit. Okay. So that was one thing that was going on. Another thing that was going on is we kept on raising rounds of funding so that our expectations of growth continued to escalate in the other direction. Okay, so we needed to generate more pipeline and close more deals, but our leads were flatting and declining. Okay. But the, you know, other good thing is we continued to grow the BDR organization. So we, you know, initially started with two, then we went to five, you know, a couple of years later, we had 50 people in our BDR program.
Wow.
And then what happened is, you know, we had some reorgs in the company, you know, we started looking, you know, really closely at how various functions of our business were performing. You know, one of the things that we looked at was maybe the BDR program wasn't performing as well as it should. And so I took the program back over again about a year and a half ago.
Okay. And since you've got it back in your hands, what's been the biggest change?
Well, you know, we initially started the program to make outbound calls, right? And, you know, to me, outbound calls is, you know, you know, picking up the phone and calling people, right? I mean, I'm a little bit old school. That's how I started, you know, and that's how a lot of my peers started. And in fact, a lot of Acquia's, you know, executive team, you know, that's what their expectation of a BDR team is. Not only do they send emails, but they also make calls. Somehow down the path, the team made a decision that making phone calls wasn't really productive. And so it became primarily a emailing organization. So, you know, I would walk by the team and it would be like, I was walking through a library and I'd be, hey, doesn't anyone make, this is when I wasn't managing the team. Doesn't anyone make phone calls around here? And everyone would kind of like cower, you know, and I'd go talk to the people running it and say like, what the hell's going on? I mean, why don't people make phone calls? This is, oh, we tried making calls, but all the research says that, you know, making phone calls, you know, is counterproductive. It's a waste of time, waste of energy, and email is the way to go. And I'm like, well, you know, how are we going to be teaching people how to actually have conversations with customers? Because a big part of our BDR program is for them to develop skills that they can then take on to their next role, whether it's, you know, an inside sales job, which then turns into a field job, or become account management. We need to teach people how to talk to customers. That's one of the reasons why you make phone calls. So anyway, you know, there's a lot of back and forth. And then, you know, finally, when I took the team back over, that's the first thing that I instituted. And I told people day one, you know, we're going to have a target number of calls that you're going to be making every week. And we're going to, you know, we're going to teach you how to make those calls. Okay. And we're going to teach you ways that have proven to be effective. And, you know, you're probably maybe not going to like having to do this. Okay. But it doesn't matter. You're going to do it because this is what it takes to be successful. And, you know, if you don't want to sign up for this program, you can leave. And so we had a, you know, a few people leave. But then the team got, you know, they're wrapped around making phone calls. Okay. And, you know, pretty soon they started to realize, well, wait a second, I actually can get people on the phone. Okay. And when I get them on the phone, I can actually get them engaged into a conversation that can, you know, lead to enough interest that I can book a discovery call for my AE with them. And so that's how the thing started to snowball.
Gotcha. What's the impact been on the output of that team since you started making calls again?
Well, it's been real interesting. Okay. So the first thing it did, which I knew this was going to happen, but I didn't want to like advertise this to the team, is that, you know, obviously an inbound lead is probably a higher quality than making an outbound call, right? Mm-hmm. So historically that's pretty true. So the first thing that all of our outbounding did, and and we were leaving voicemails for people, we were, you know, calling people, our outbounding actually drove people to our website. And then they'd start looking around, they'd go to a webinar or whatever. So we would turn someone who was really cold and not aware of who Acquia was into someone who was curious enough to just start doing some research and then turned into an MQL, right? So it had a you know, as I said, you know, our inbound funnel, our inbound leads flow was declining. So that helped with the, you know, increasing the MQL flow. But when I look at just pure pipeline sourced, okay, what we've done is we've basically in a year doubled the output per BDR per head by just having them focus making outbound calls and keeping and holding them accountable to those weekly KPIs.
So are they not?
That's pretty consistent with our experience when you add calls, because, you know, we advocate calls too. Some people, when I read the book and like, I don't have to call, not quite the message, but, you know, a lot of companies, yeah, double. Do you remember what's the current KPIs that you're for doubling? Is it SQLs or?
Yeah, so we KPI people on calls, conversations, discovery calls, booked, or we call them, you know, SQLs. And we pay them on actually the number of opportunities that get created out of those discovery calls. Okay, so that's how we pay them. But we also measure the pipeline per head, per BDR. And that's a really good measure because if that starts to increase, we know that our team is, you know, finding, you know, larger high quality opportunities. And it's interesting, you know, because our BDR team is really a transition team. So, you know, every quarter we lose certain percentage of the team where they get, most of them get promoted to other roles within Acquia, but some of them we move out of the company. You know, we have a shelf life of 18 months for a BDR, and say, you know, by, you know, after the end of six quarters, you're either going to find a role within Acquia or it's time for you to go do something else. Because
that's actually a long time. We should touch on how you keep them motivated that long.
Well, sometimes it's a little bit shorter. Sometimes it's a little bit shorter, but it's interesting. Like when we have a team like we have this quarter that has a lot of tenure, they're completely crushing it because, you know, there wasn't a lot of transition last quarter. So we've got people who've been with us now for, you know, the majority of the team for about a year or more. And not only that, they've been in their territories for an extended period of time. They've been working with the same AEs for an extended period of time. So like all these things are clicking, you know, there isn't a lot of movement and transition. So, you know, that's really helped our productivity this particular quarter, is that.
And of the pipeline that you're generating, what's the split between inbound and outbound now?
It's a great question. So we have sometimes a hard time tracking things all the way through the funnel. So the way we track things today is at a discovery call or an SQL level, what percent of those were actually booked via outbound or versus inbound? And it hovers between 40 and 45% per quarter booked outbound versus inbound. So it's almost 50-50 now. Some territories it's actually more because they get, you know, they're getting no inbound and it's pure, you know, pure outbounding. Others are a little bit higher because, you know, it's a, let's say a vertical where we have a lot of penetration. There's a lot of awareness. We have a lot of people, you know, coming to our webinars and so on. So they get more out, they get more inbound.
Gotcha. And I imagine it probably varies a little bit by the, like you said, by the territories and by the size of the deals.
Yeah, totally. It's interesting. Our outbound deals are typically the bigger ones. And haven't found the reason why, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, it's how their cards fall. But that, you know, pumps people up because, you know, when they realize they made a cold call and they find a $1 million opportunity, you know, and they're walking around, you know, high-fiving everybody, you know, that's what keeps people motivated in calling on the phone. And the other thing, Aaron, to go back to your question of how do we keep people motivated so long, we do have progressions so people can progress in the BDR organization from a entry-level BDR to a senior BDR or to a team lead. And with that comes more responsibility and also a pay raise. But what we're also doing too is once they're in the job for about a year, we have a sense for what path they're going to go down next, whether it's going into a quota carrier role, you know, into our inside sales team, which then goes into a field role, or they're going to go into an account management slot. And then we start training them for their next job while they're in the BDR job, you know, kind of night school kind of training, right? So that by the time they're ready to move into that new role, their ramp up time is going to be pretty short because we're already teaching them the basic skills they need to succeed in that next job.
Can you speak to that, the sort of career arc that you have for these SDRs, BDRs,
sure.
Sorry.
Sure. So, you know, our you know, hiring message to, you know, our typical profile is someone right out of school or maybe a year out of school. And it's someone who aspires to have a career in sales. And there's also other things that we look for, but really we're looking for people who at this point in their life want to have a career in sales. So we show them that you come to Acquia, you're going to be in this BDR role for, you know, X amount of time, you know, 18 months, maybe sooner. And in that period of time, we're going to teach you how to be successful, right? So maybe you got good grades, maybe you did other things in school, but now you're in the business world. We're going to teach you how to get results in the business world. And once you learn how to get results, we're going to, you know, figure out what your orientation is, and you can go one of two paths at Acquia. And the one path is the quota carrier. So you would go into an inside sales role where you're, you know, you're, it's more of a, I'll call it a transaction-based business, where your, you know, ASPs maybe 25, 30K. You know, you're doing a lot of transactions a month. It's a great place to learn how to sell because you're seeing a lot of deals, right? And you're learning because you're, you know, you're working a lot of transactions. And you do that for maybe, you know, a year, year and a half. And then you're ready for a field role. And that's typically a, you know, a field role selling to mid-market customers. And you could do that for a year and then graduate to the next, the, you know, the top field role is a enterprise field role. So we've had people come to Acquia, start as BDRs, work their way through BDR, inside sales, mid-market field, and now our enterprise reps, making five times what they were when they started as BDRs 4 years ago. And they're totally crushing it because they've come up through the program. You know, we've taught them how to be successful. They understand our company, how it works. They can really articulate what we do. And they've got the work ethic that is required in order to succeed in, you know, selling technology, you know, in today's world.
How many BDRs make that full transition?
I'm going to say, well, along the path, there's people along the path. There's probably half of them go into the sales quota carrying route. Mm-hmm. Another 20% go to the account management route, okay, which they're also quota carriers, but they're more farmers than hunters. Mm-hmm. And they have a similar progression in account management where you're dealing with, you know, kind of smaller customers, then you go into strategic, and then you could be managing a multinational. That's, you know, that's, you know, 5 years out. So that's about 70%. About another 15% finds other roles within Acquia, which could be in marketing or could be in, you know, sales operations. You know, sometimes we find kids who've got really great, you know, analytical skills, and they realize that's the, you know, the path they want to go down. So they'll find a job there. And then about 15% of them go elsewhere.
Gotcha. You shared two weeks ago we chatted, you shared an interesting stat about the percentage of top performers that have come from the BDR program.
Sure. Yeah, I'm really, really proud of this. So last quarter, you know, we always do a stack ranking of all the AEs worldwide. And 9 out of the 10 top performers were people who came through our BDR program, which, you know, is pretty impressive because a lot of some of the people we have in the field have been selling, you know, enterprise, you know, customers and enterprise software for 15, 20 years. And we've got, you know, our young guns outperforming them.
Yeah, well, we saw the same thing at Salesforce, which is, you know, you put people, I always believe that the prospecting team also has to help teach them how to take charge of their destiny, right? How to go out and make things happen. Because, you know, we saw lots of salespeople in the field who were really experienced, but they didn't really know how to go make business happen. If they didn't have a relationship, they were stuck. They would flail around. They were too dependent on, like, prior relationships. So,
well, selling has changed so much. You know, I mean, you know, what, you know, a customer is how far down their buying journey now before they, you know, interact with a salesperson? 50% maybe, right? Where, you know, relationships were extremely key in the past, you know, to they're always going to be important, right? You know, you definitely need relationships to close deals. But what I find is the people we brought through the program are used to hustling. They know how to hustle, right? They know how to do the things they have to do every day because that's what we teach them, right? We say, look, there are certain things you need to do every day to be successful. And don't walk out of the office until you've done those things and you've done those things well. And, you know, if you do all those things, the results are going to come. They might not come immediately. They might not come next week. But trust us, you do those things, the results are going to come. And so they've got that mentality now. So, like, their activity levels, right, are so much higher than some of our more experienced salespeople because that's what they believe. They believe that if I do these things, okay, I'm going to be successful. And so that's what they do. And the results prove it.
So it sounds like you guys have put a ton of thought into the sort of into your program. And I got a little taste of it a couple of weeks ago, but maybe just for the sake of the audience, you mentioned four sort of key pillars that you teach your people in your BDR program to really set them up for success.
Yeah. I like to break things down and make them as simple as possible. The 80-20 rule, the things that are really most critical to your success. And so when we looked at, BDR performance at Acquia, and I realize it's different everywhere, right? But at Acquia, the things that were really important, number one was research. And what I mean by research is I require all the BDRs to have a list of 100 people that they can call at all times. And it's not just name and phone number. It's the name, the title, the company, their phone number, and the reason to call them so that they can go down their lists and they're not like screwing around all day, like, who do I call now? Right. Mm-hmm. So they've got that list. And so the way you get that list is you have to continue to evolve it, because every day they're calling people and they take them off the list because they created an opportunity with them, or they realize there's no opportunity there or whatever. Right. So there's that research component. The second thing is messaging. And that goes to both phone and email. So learning how to use the phone, learning how to use email. We look at a lot of metrics to determine who's, mastering those two things. Plus we listen to calls and so on. And we actually, look at emails to see who's getting it. The third component is just, pure organization. Coming in every day with a plan of what you're going to accomplish, and don't let anything get in the way of you, not accomplishing the things you need to do. And then, we help them figure out how do you schedule your time. Like the first pillar is research. Well, we don't want you spending your time when you should be calling people doing research, right? So we, explain to them when you should do your research.
What does that schedule look like?
I recommend they do it on weekends. Okay. Yeah. Or like during the, schedule breaks, because it's really hard to be on the phones hammering all day long. You go brain dead doing that, right? So, you schedule a rhythm, say from this time to this time, I'm going to be calling this, campaign or this group of customers where my pitch is going to be, pretty similar, right? So I don't have to, am I calling someone about commerce or I'm calling someone about this? It's boom, boom, boom. I can just go down my list. And then in that break before your next call session, that's when you work on your research. Okay. And then, the last component is we find if you have a really good relationship with your account executive, BDR is also, that's also a contributing factor to their success. And so we actually have a playbook, and it's an agreement between a BDR and an AE about, what is the expectation of of each of you? How often should you communicate? What should those communications look like? And, I monitor that like on a weekly basis. And if there's something that's going awry, I intervene right away, because that can have a big impact on a BDR's performance if they have a poor relationship with the AE. So again, the four things are the research and the list, the messaging, via phone and email, organizational skills, and then the AE relationship.
Right on. In the interest of time, because we could probably make each one of these its own episode. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pick, maybe just cherry pick sort of one of my favorites and sort of ask you to go a little bit deeper here. Starting with research, the one thing that I think I struggled with most when I was an AE was that sort of reason to call. Can you maybe walk me through the process that you go through to coach the reps on? How do you figure this out? I'm staring at this guy's LinkedIn or looking at him in Salesforce. Like, I called you because you came up on my list in Salesforce.
Yeah. Well,
how do I do better than that?
so there's, two kinds of reach out for us, right? One is we get an inbound lead. So that's easy, right? The reason to call is you attended a webinar or, you downloaded this white paper about blah, 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 blah. So that's an easy one, right? The more difficult one is you're calling someone cold. And so there's a number of things that we do. So we do pretty well in select verticals, And one of our core strengths is we have a lot of big name customers. You know, we're really great at acquiring logos of, you know, global 2000 companies that are, you know, market leaders, right? So an example of, you know, one reason to call is we're working with these three firms in your industry with the person who's in your position. And, you know, we felt it was appropriate to reach out to learn more about what you're trying to accomplish there to see if any of our experience might be relevant to what you're trying to do. So one is tying the industry thing in. Another one is, you know, we set up, you know, alerts. We use Google Alerts and Owler and all these things. We have these trigger events. Mm-hmm. You know, someone gets promoted, they're launching a new product, there's a, you know, merger or acquisition, right? You know, those things seem to, you know, trigger digital like transformation type things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if something like that happens, one of our BDRs will get an alert. All their accounts are set up. They get an alert. We've got a template. You know, they put in the person's name. They put a little bit of personalization about the specific thing, whether it's a merger with blah, blah, blah. They shoot it out, and then they start following up with calls, right? And that seems to work really well. We tell people, if you can't find a reason to call somebody, don't call them, right? Because that's the first thing, you know, when if someone calls me, and I never pick up my phone, by the way, but if someone did call me and I picked up my phone, you know, my first thing is, why are you calling me? If you don't have a good reason, I'd be like, you know, see you later. But that's what we teach them. And they've gotten really, really good about, you know, getting creative with the reasons to call. And our BDRs love it because that's the creative part of their job, you know? And they're always talking about, you know, things that they found. Obviously, they use LinkedIn profiles and stuff like that, right? But, you know, you guys had a podcast that I watched. I can't remember the guy's name. But it was about account-based marketing, and he went through LinkedIn and the 9 things he does on LinkedIn, similar things like that.
David Morzinski.
Yeah, so we lifted a couple of things out of that. So thank him for that. There were some really things that we there was things in there that we hadn't thought of before, which was really good.
What are some of your favorites, just in recent memory, that you didn't steal from David?
Well, I think the when they're raising a round of funding, like a certain round of funding, that indicates that, I mean, because this happened at Acquia, like, you know, our I think it was our B round was a big round. And that was all geared, thrown into building a sales and marketing engine. So we can kind of spot, you know, a company that's raising a round and we know where that money's going. And typically what they're doing is not only are they going to build out their sales organization, but they're going to really, you know, take their marketing efforts to the next level, which usually indicates a whole effort with digital. And that's, you know, that's kind of the trigger point for us. And so we've had a lot of success calling CMOs, you know, right when they've got a round of funding. And we say to them, hey, you know, congratulations. You've probably been waiting for this because you've probably wanted to, you know, to expand what you're doing. And they're like, how did you know that? You know, and we can go, same thing happened with us. And here's what we did with our money. You know, we've, you know, so we get them engaged in a conversation, but that's something that really works well for us.
Right on. This is a great place to transition to, which is, you know, getting people on the phone, which is the sort of the next pillar there. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing that Yeah, and I'm just cherry picking my favorites here because we've got this whole list of things and it's almost infinite. But I mean, I think I'm torn between, you know, best times to call and how to leave a voicemail. And I know no matter which one I pick, everybody on the episode or half the people are going to go, oh, you should have done the other one. What's your favorite?
So I got to tell you about the best time to call. All right. I always laugh my ass off when I see these research things about, you know, so-and-so. There was one like some university put all this time and money to what's the best time to for a salesperson to call. And it's like, you know, before 8 a.m., lunchtime, after 4. And I'd be like, no shit. Okay. I mean, isn't that pretty obvious? Right. So you don't have to spend a lot of time and effort to figure out those are good times to call. Okay. I'll tell you what though. my first sales manager, okay, told me that, you know, the best time to call is when you believe it's the best time to call, because so much about calling is conviction. And if you start like dialing in, you know, you're just going through the motions, you know, you may get somebody, but you might not be in the right frame of mind. Right. So I tell my BDRs, we know when the good times to call are, right? But don't limit that to you only calling during those times, right? Call whenever the hell you want. Call people on the weekends. Okay. You know, call people at 6 a.m. I used to do that as a salesperson, right? When I call CEOs, right? Or call them, you know, after 6 o'clock. Doesn't matter. Just make your calls, right? And so that's the thing to me. The other thing about voicemails is we do have people leave voicemails. We've trained them how to do it. And again, voicemails is a thing that triggers people to go to our website and start poking around. So that's why we leave them. Do we expect callbacks? No. You know, I mean, most people even hate listening to voicemails now, but they hear the name, they hear Acquia, and they see an email and they're like, who the hell are these people? I'm going to go check it out. And they go and they start looking at things, and all of a sudden, boom, they become an MQL. We call them and they're like, oh yeah, I did download that white paper. You know, tell me more about what you guys do. And that's how the whole thing works.
Hmm. So it's not about the voicemail. It's just, you could just leave a voicemail that says Acquia. That's that.
Yeah. We make sure they're professional when they do it. Right. And we do leave our phone numbers at the end. And we say our names a couple of times, and, you know, we have a whole structure of how we do it, and we keep it short. Right. We don't want people thinking, when the hell is this thing going to end? You know, but we don't expect a callback, but we do. It's just one more thing in the person's brain that might prompt him to, you know, go to acquia.com and learn more about what we do. And then we got them once they go there.
Yeah. I only know one SDR that gets callbacks on voicemails. And we had one of the companies that we were working with accuse us of giving her all the good leads, because she was getting voicemail. Like, she'd get people calling her back from their voicemails. She had a higher response rate on her emails. And the only conclusion we could come to was it was her name. We looked at the data in so many different ways. And it's like, the only variable, I mean, there's a million other variables you can look at, but the only one that we can see, it was her name.
That's crazy.
Yeah. In the, just for the sake of time, because I'm sure people, like, we want to keep these to about 30 minutes. Maybe I'll skip to the sort of last question here. And then I know we got one more thing after that. I'm going to do the salesperson hand on the doorknob trick to you. But the relationship with AAE, I think this is a super critical piece that I think most companies don't spend enough time on. Can you share, could you share that agreement playbook that you have between the BDRs and your AEs? Like, yeah. What's part of that? What's in that?
Sure. So, you know, our AEs for the most part have geographic territories. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're not only geographic, but vertical focused as well. They might be covering, you know, just one vertical. And, you know, because our organization really depends on people progressing from one step to another, and we do a ton of mentoring and coaching, we're expecting the AE to, you know, transport some of their knowledge into the BDR's head. So the AE should know their territory, right? They should be the one who is saying, these are the best targets for us, and then helping the BDR kind of think through, okay, so let's look at this company. Let's look at what they do. Let's look at, are they using any of our competitors today? And there's certain things that we look at. And then what they'll do is they'll say, okay, here's the person that we should call, or the people we should call, and here's why. And so they have that dialogue with the BDRs. So the BDR can kind of then figure out how to do that on their own. Once the AE can start generate, you know, get feels comfortable that the BDR has its, understands the thought process. So that's part of it. But then what they do is they check messaging. You know, they're supposed to talk twice a week. And they'll compare notes. Like, the BDR will say, hey, I contacted these companies. This is the messaging I used. And this is the response or lack of response that I get. And then we'll course correct. The other thing that we do that's really successful for us, for our field people, is we run a ton of intimate events, right? And so, you know, getting someone an invitation to like an intimate dinner that's got a really cool, you know, guest speaker is a warm call, right? So we're, you know, the BDRs and AEs are figuring out how do we use that event to get to these people that we've really struggled to reach in the past. So that's another example of the strategy that they go back and forth. And then, you know, the other part of the equation is our BDRs set up discovery calls. And what they do for the discovery call is they put together a briefing for the AE. So, you know, we have a template that they use where they, here's the person, you know, here's how we got them. It was either an outbound call or it was, you know, an inbound lead. Here's what we talked about on the call. This is what they were interested in. Here's how we, you know, convinced them to take a call with you. This is what I know about the situation, right? And then here's some more research on the company and so on. So we put together that, sometimes it's a two-pager, right? And then the AE will do the discovery call. And so the thing on the AE is they have to show up for the discovery calls and they have to be prepped. And, you know, they can't just get on the phone and start pitching, right? It's called the discovery call for a reason. Mm-hmm. And we've had AEs who, you know, were product sales guys and they just get on the phone and start pitching and pitching and pitching. And, you know, at the end of the call, we'd know exact same amount about that situation that we did when the BDR did the initial call, right? So there's that's the thing back and forth. And so there is feedback that goes back and forth because the BDRs sit in on a lot of the discovery calls and they will critique the AEs and tell them if they don't think they did a good job. Once they get to a certain level and they feel like they've earned the right to do that, but of course not at first.
I can't imagine that would be a good situation, the guy on his first week.
No.
Mike, thanks for sharing. I think that's one thing that I'm going to pull out of this and go and implement with our sales team right now. And I've got the advantage because we're recording this today and it won't be out for another 6 weeks. So that's one of the advantages I get in recording this podcast. One of the other sort of great advantages for me personally is getting to meet individuals like yourself. And when we first chatted, you've got a bit of a passion project that I'm also passionate about, but I would say exceptionally less experienced at than yourself. Do you mind sharing what linking sales leaders means to you and how it came about?
Sure. So I've been in sales management for 30 years, right? And one of the things that, you know, struck me as I became a first-time manager is how little I was prepared to succeed in the job, but how few resources they actually were out there to teach me how to be an effective sales leader. But I also realized, you know, hey, this, you know, being a really good sales leader is you can change your life. You know, you can have tremendous upward mobility, you can make a lot of money. And so I really, on my own, studied how to get good at it. And then, you know, I started a company, this is Preacquia, realizing that there was a huge need to teach people how to become effective sales leaders. And I built a online curriculum that I coupled with one-on-one coaching, where I would put someone through, I took the sales management function, broke it up into, you know, 9 different components at that time. And then I, you know, people would do maybe 2 or 3 of the modules each week. They would have a homework assignment to do, which basically was to take the key concepts from a particular module and then apply it to their situation. And then they'd have a one-on-one coaching session with me every week. And so it was about a 4-week program. And so by the end of it, right, they would, you know, have a much better idea of what good sales leadership looked like. They would have a framework of how they needed to do it at their particular company. And they realized what are the things that were most important to them, right? You know, at that particular point in time, whether it was hiring or onboarding or, you know, getting better at, you know, measuring and inspection, whatever it was, right? So I put a couple hundred people through this program. And then when I came to Acquia, I had to shut it down because it was just too much. But we did use a lot of the content at Acquia. So long story short, I got approached by one of the guys who actually went through the program, you know, just 10 years ago, about 10 years ago. He was a first-time manager, really struggling. Calls me up and says, hey, you know, now I'm a VP of sales and I got all these people working for me and I got a bunch of green managers. They knew less than what I knew when I went through this thing with you. Can you train these guys? And I said, well, I shut the thing down. And he goes, well, there's probably more of a need now than it ever was to train people how to be good, effective sales leaders. So I approached Acquia. Acquia said, hey, love the idea. I hired, you know, George Vallone, who was our first BDR at Acquia, who had left and gone to do other things, to help me. And so we refreshed all the content and we launched this online course to teach people how to become effective sales leaders. And the name of the company is called Linking Sales Leaders. And we also have a group on LinkedIn that has over 15,000 members on LinkedIn, where people post content, share ideas. And we're also running, we're going to be running local networking events for sales leaders in various parts of the country. Because I'm a big believer that if you're a sales leader, especially a frontline leader, you need to build a network of peers that you can go to and talk to and share ideas and information and so on, because that'll really help you avoid problems, but also find solutions much quicker.
So Mike, I feel like I learned so much from the event. The people were so high quality, and it was great to see you in person finally.
Well, I'm glad you made it.
Yeah. Mike, this was, I feel like I learned so much just today on this episode. I can't wait for this next event in Boston. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's been great. It's been great. And thanks. We want to thank Aaron for all his great ideas, because I truly believe if we didn't implement that program, we would be in a much worse place than we are today at Acquia. So, I want to thank you guys.